Hi, my name is Mark O'Shea. Born in Boston, lived my whole life in the rock and roll capital of Cleveland, Ohio. You're listening to today's Boondoggle Podcast.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to this intro before the intro of our today's Boondoggle Radio Show. As you know, we're a veteran-owned and operated podcast, and this has been an incredibly therapeutic journey for me as a veteran that struggles with PTSD and anxiety, just getting out and talking to people. But it does cost us some money, so if you feel so obliged to donate to our GoFundMe, we have a GoFundMe under Today's Boondoggle. We also have a Venmo at Today's Boondoggle that you can donate to. Our anchor sponsorship at anchor.fm/today's boondoggle. Any questions, comments, suggestions, complaints, you can email us at today'sboondoggle@gmail.com. And please follow us on our social media sites at Today's Boondoggle on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all your social media platforms, as well as our YouTube channel, our Rumble channel, and our BitChute channel. Please follow, subscribe, comment, and download. And please consider checking out our sponsors. If you support our sponsor, Dream Nutrition, you can receive 10% off your order by using the promo code BOONDOG10 at checkout. So Dream Nutrition, they're a veteran-owned and operated company as well, so please support them and receive 10% off using the promo code BOONDOG10. Thanks for your time, and thanks for listening.
Listen up! Hold on to your seats! Grab your girls, grab your beers!
What's going on? It's Tommy Beck, and you're listening to Today's Boondoggle.
This is Mark Metcalf, and you are listening to Today's Boondoggle with Bailey on Domain Cleveland Radio.
You are listening to Today's Boondoggle with Bailey on Domain Cleveland Radio. Yes, Cato Kalen listens to this all the time.
I am Monty Heath, so Warren Heath, and you are listening to Today's Boondoggle.
Hey, what's up? It's John from Skillet, and you are listening to Today's Boondoggle on Domain Cleveland Radio.
Fasten your seatbelts.
What's going on, everybody? It's Bill Bailey with Today's Boondoggle. And a real quick housekeeping note, if you're watching us on YouTube or Spotify or YouTube, Odyssey, Rumble, BitChute, please hit that follow and subscribe button. And if you're listening to us on Spotify or Apple, Google, any of the podcast platforms, please hit that follow and subscribe button so we can continue to bring you conversations like the ones I'm bringing you today. We're going into the Dollhouse, talking with the guys from the band, A Doll's House. How you doing, guys?
Doing good. Doing good. How about you?
Good. Like me and Dav were talking a little bit before coming on about, you know, Shauna connecting me with you guys to set this up and just like, you know, looking into your story and definitely, you know, story about just keeping after your dream. You know, you're still pushing, pursuing your dreams, even when life takes you on where life takes you, you know?
Right.
But usually when I have people on for the first time, I like to get a little bit of a background. So even before the dream of pursuing the music and band and stuff, do you guys remember what you wanted to be what you wanted to be when you grew up?
You want to take that first time?
Yeah, sure. I mean, the thing that I remember, you know, being a kid, like a very young kid, the first thing I wanted to be was a basketball player. And the next thing was, a musician.
Nice. Yeah, for me, funny that you say basketball. Actually, I didn't know that, Seth. I wanted to either play for the Rams, the Dodgers, as you can tell by the hat, but music was pretty early on for me, really early on.
Yeah. Yeah. So hopefully some of these questions, you guys will still learn something about each other, even after all these years together and being friends. But, yeah. So then, you know, you mentioned music early on. Like, when do you remember, like, who was some of your early musical influences when music finally caught your, when you originally caught your ear?
I can take this one. It's a pretty common answer, but it was the Beatles, as you can probably see by the pictures in the background. Am I pointing?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that was at a very young age, I got into my parents' record collection, and they had two Beatle albums that just hit home for me, and that was it. That was the start of it for me, and I just decided I want to be like them. How about you, Seth?
Yeah, similar. I mean, the memories I have of, like, the records in our house, the earliest records were that my parents had that were of interest to me were like the Beach Boys' Endless Summer. They had a double album of Neil Diamond, Hot August Night, which, if you haven't seen it, is worth seeing because it's like nothing like what people think Neil Diamond is. He looks like he's in Led Zeppelin or something. So it's kind of funny to see that. But it was stuff like that. And they weren't really, you know, big into rock. But it's funny because one of the things that Dave and I bonded over early on, obviously, was the Beatles. And you can probably see them behind me here, too. And I think it was the same two albums that Dave's talking about. But I actually discovered the Beatles by, and this shows you how long ago it was, I would go to the public library near where Dave and I grew up, and you could actually rent albums from the library. And so I rented these two albums, the Blue and the Red Beatles albums, which were sort of like greatest hits of the Beatles. And that kind of got me started and hooked. So that was sort of the kind of earliest, thing that I glommed onto.
Nice. And then when did you guys decide that, you're going to start learning how to play music?
Oh, for me, it was third grade. I had already started playing just in like the school where we played trumpet, stuff like that. But as far as playing guitar and rock music, my best friend at the time in third grade blew my mind when he actually could play to one of the Beatles songs. And for whatever reason, that clicked. So I went home. I said, that's it. I got to learn how to play that too. I don't know. At third grade, I guess you just couldn't imagine that. Well, wait a second. Other people can play that too? I don't know. It's a silly thing when you're that age. But that was it. When I saw my best friend could play a Beatles song, I said, oh, that's it. I got to learn how to do that too.
Yeah, and similarly, no one in my family played any instruments. And one day I just got it in my head that I wanted to try guitar. And thankfully, my parents said, sure. And so we tried it. And that was probably when I was about 13 or 14. And then very quickly from that, I kind of went into a heavy punk rock phase. And so that was kind of led to my first band, which was a punk band when we were like 14 or 15, and very, very guitar driven stuff. But that's how it started for me.
And I'm always somebody that's curious about those young days in bands and coming up with the band names. So what was the punk band's band name?
So it's funny because it dovetails. Dave can tell you the story of how we got to A Doll's House, but it's a little similar to the name of the punk band was The Undecided. And it was because we were playing someplace and we didn't have a name and they put us down as Undecided. And so that became great.
Yeah.
Nice.
And the story of A Doll's House is really similar because this was Seth's fault. Seth pulled a surprise on us and booked us a gig at the Troubadour. And we needed a band name. And I don't know why making a band name is so difficult. But I figured, it just happened to be, I was just reading a book that said that the Beatles' White Album was supposed to be called A Doll's House, but they didn't use it for various reasons. So I thought, well, I'll take their scraps. Let's call ourselves A Doll's House, And so that was it. We needed a name that week. And that's a story that we still joke about Seth booking us at the Troubadour. But I'm glad he did. I mean, because that's where this all started.
Nice. Yeah. So, let's talk about A Doll's House, like first coming together, as a band, even before you had the name. And then,
getting to, you know, play one, what, your first gig at the Troubadour?
Yes.
So in terms of, you know, how we got together, I'll tell you the slightly longer version because it is kind of funny. There was a girl who lived down the street from me who went to Dave's high school and knew Dave. And Dave went to a nice high school in the part of LA where we grew up at a time when I was getting kicked out of probably every other high school in our area. And this girl went to school with Dave, and she said, you know, she knew how I like playing music, and she said, you should really meet this guy. And so I said, great, you know, give him my number. What I never learned till a lot later was Dave then called me, and at the time, on my answering machine, I had the very beginning of Motley Crue's Shout at the Devil, which, to put it mildly, was not Dave's cup of tea at the moment. No. And so he was like, forget this. Turned out, fortuitously, he then later, some months later, a year later, he came into the clothing store that I happened to be working at the time. And I thought, this guy looks like a kindred spirit. And so he bought a shirt from me, and I just said, are you a musician or are you in a band, something like that? And he said, yeah. And so we exchanged numbers. And, you know, that was probably when we were 16. And pretty quickly we, you know, became, you know, and have stayed best friends and started writing songs together then and have kind of kept going.
And then, nice. And then Tony, our drummer, I met in high school. Actually, you should probably tell that story too, Seth, because I think I called you and said, oh my God, this guy's got to be in our band. He hits the drums hard. He's so precise. Tony blew me away. He was younger than us. He was a year or two younger than us. And, you know, in high school, that's a big deal, right? But I just thought, this guy is great. So that was then how we got the three of us together. He kind of came kicking and screaming, but he eventually gave in.
And so that was really, so that was the three of us. And so when we were, you know, a band back in the late 80s, early 90s, that was the lineup. And Dave and I did the singing. And then, you know, life sort of took over. We did all right in the LA scene. We played, you know, places like the Troubadour and the Whiskey and the Roxy, et cetera. And, you know, we had a nice little sort of group of people that show up to hear us play and, you know, had a little momentum, but at the end of the day, you know, we were pretty young. We were, you know, all of 19 or 20 at that time. We really didn't have an adult in the room to help guide us to what, you know, what do you think about? What do you do to try to get to that next level? And so things, you know, as they do, life kind of takes over and we went our separate ways. And then a few years ago, just got it back in our mind to, look, let's just for us, let's just make a proper album. And it's something we love doing and let's just do it for us. And, you know, that way when we're really old, we can say, all right, we did it. And we decided, at Dave's urging, let's really find somebody who can really sing. And so we put some stuff up on some of these sites, and just through good luck, a guy named Dave Santos, who's our lead singer, found us. We all kind of clicked together, and it's great because now we really have somebody who knows really how to sing, and he's been just like the perfect addition to the band. And so that is a Doll's House now.
And then you guys get together with them. You're jamming, writing a bunch of songs. And then, let's talk about, like, you know, I mean, you still didn't really have the name, you said, but let's talk about, like, okay, we're going to do our first show at the Troubadour, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, so back then it was, you know, just like Dave said, it was, and I have sort of a, seems to be something I do with the band is I just get these harebrained ideas and say, and just do something rash, like book us at a club when we're probably not really ready. And the way we actually figured that out was, if you know the band Jane's Addiction was a, you know, big band in LA, but at this time they were really just starting to get big. And we actually, Dave kind of knew the drummer, we would sometimes play with him a little bit, but I went and saw Jane's Addiction at something called the LA Street Scene, which was kind of a big outdoor music festival kind of thing in LA. And they were, like I say, they were just sort of on their way of becoming, you know, a big deal. And I just went up to Perry Farrell, who was the singer, and I just asked him, and I said, how do you play a club? And he kind of gave me some pointers and said, call this guy at the Troubadour. And I did. And that's how we ended up doing the first show. And it was great because like Dave sort of said, it was kind of a little bit of the kick in the ass that we needed because it really gave us something to focus on and you know, practice for, really be ready. And so we did that. And then that kind of led to a nice string of playing all those places as well as, you know, some other places around LA.
Yeah, because I was reading in your bio. I mean, all the you guys ended up, you know, so you get that you get that first show at the Troubadour. You had to come up with the name. And then once you had the name, you guys started, you're kind of off and running and hitting all the hot spots there, like what with Rainbow and
yeah, it was the Roxy, Whiskey,
yeah,
Raji's, Ante Club, a bunch of other ones. I don't remember all of them now, but it was quite a few.
And James was getting started around that time, you were saying. So what was the scene like? Who were some of the bands you were sharing stages with getting into those clubs back then?
At the same time, we didn't open for any of these bands, but they were playing the same clubs. And obviously they were much more successful. But there was the Chili Peppers had been around for a while. And Jane's Addiction, of course. They also, two of the members went to my high school. It was kind of cool to see them kind of lead the way. Obviously we weren't as successful as them, but what were some of the other bands? Guns N' Roses played Troubadour. 311 came from Omaha and started playing, but maybe that was a little later.
Yeah. But the funny thing then was, you know, and I don't know how different it is now, but then it was so somewhat haphazard and, you know, you could go and, you know, so I don't remember the band names, but I know, you know, some of the nights we would play, there'd be like a full on like hair metal band playing for us, you know, and we were sort of like at the opposite end, kind of on the alternative indie rock stuff. Right. And that would be the same with all these, you know, these other bands too. It would just be a total mix of whatever they just decided. I don't think it was by design. I think it's just like the people running the clubs. You're like, you got to fill these slots and whoever, you know, kind of gets to us first and we feel like they'll actually sell the tickets, we'll book them. And so it's actually kind of a fun way to see things because you just see stuff you would never by design, you know, go and see otherwise. But I think some of the other bands that were around then were like Fishbone was a big LA band then. You know, but it was interesting, right? Because you'd have bands come into town that a little different than the types of bands we're talking about, but like Duran Duran, who actually has been a big influence on Dave and I, they, you know, the first place they played, I think, in LA was the Roxy. And that was like when they had an album and all that. So that was an interesting thing about growing up in LA at that time, is it was one of these places where, like Dave said, you know, you might be playing the same place Guns N' Roses would play the next night. You know, these bands just take off.
And real quick, Seth, are you able to like maybe pull the phone up a little bit closer for when you talk or whatever too? Cause it's a sure. little, yeah, there you go. That
bit of an voice, echo.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot better. And then, I mean, we hear all the stories about the infamous, you know, Sunset Strip and like most of the bands, you know, have like, were leaving their homes out east or whatever, you know, to pursue that dream and go out to Sunset Strip. Now you guys just, it grew up there, huh? It was your backyard.
Yeah.
So that was your local scene.
So I lived on an apartment with my mom for a few years, right near where Dave grew up on Riverside Drive. And at that time there was a show on MTV called Headbangers Ball or Headbangers Ballroom or something. And it was started by this guy, I think his name was Ricky Rackman, and he was like the owner of a big deal club for kind of the metal scene in LA. I think it was called like the Cat House.
Yeah.
And he lived in our apartment building and he was really good friends with Motley Crue. And so honestly, I would come home from high school some days and there would be like three Corvettes lined up in front of the apartment building. And it was three of the guys from Motley Crue. And like nice as could be, but you know, like my mom's just coming home from work, I'm coming home from high school, and Nikki Sixx is walking out to his vet, you know, and it was, I mean, LA is just kind of a crazy place like that. It is such a huge entertainment, you know, film, music, you know, all the arts, that stuff just kind of happens sometimes.
And then now, Dave, you went to school with I thought you said something about some of the guys you went to school with are actually in some of these bands too, or?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Steve Perkins and Dave Navarro went to Notre Dame. Dave was only there for a couple of years. They were both 2 or 3 years ahead of me. I can't remember now. So I was that, you know, just the underclassman. But yeah, that two of those guys went there, and so yeah, they're, I guess, among us, I guess. And yeah, and we actually ended up being friends with Steve Perkins for a while. And, you know, we would play, you know, when he's not playing with his band, you know, we'd just jam. And there was a whole group of us that would kind of play. It was cool. He's a great drummer.
Yeah, there's a band from Columbus, Ohio that I had on. And damn, why am I drawing a blank on the name right now? But they got discovered and signed through Steve Perkins' label and flew out there and got to play at his studio and actually recorded Dave Grohl's studio and stuff too.
Oh, wow.
That's cool.
But let's, you know, like, so that, you know, you guys are doing this for a while. This is your local scene. You're you know, playing all the clubs. What's some of your most memorable shows, would you say, at some of these venues?
There's a lot of memories. How do we keep this clean? Go ahead,
Seth. It's all right. You can get, you know, it's a censorship free here.
Yeah.
One of the things that stood out to me was when we played at the Whiskey, you know, we had a legitimate encore, right? You know, of like, we just played really well, and it was like one of those things where people, you know, stood there and kind of really wanting us to come back, and the club owners or people running it, the managers, because you couldn't really do that, right? Like, you sort of had your slot, you would get, it's sort of like stand-up comedy, right? Like, you've got like your 30 or 40 minutes, and then you get off because somebody else has to start getting there, you know, you got to get your equipment off and somebody else does. But we legitimately have, you know, people like wanting to hear more, and the manager was kind of like, you guys go ahead, go play another couple of songs. And, you know, that's very rewarding because it's these environments, right? These are not, you're not playing places when people, for the most part, you know, you're playing these places when people really don't know your music that well. Or if they do, it's because, like, you know, an album just came out, or like us, there's a demo you've got that's kind of circulating, you know, and so some people know 6 of your songs maybe. So, you know, it's kind of like you have to be a really good live band to kind of hold people's attention. So that was very gratifying. And then this is slightly different than your question, but some of the things that I love, the memories that I have that were really fun were, and these would be like just, you know, because we're kind of starving, you know, late teens, early 20s, you kind of will do anything to make a buck, right, and play music. And so we would get hired by fraternities at UCLA and some places in San Diego, San Diego State.
Santa Barbara.
Santa Barbara. And these things would be like, you know, you would just go and play, like, honestly, for like 3 or 4 hours. They would just have these huge parties that would basically, you know, you'd sort of get there at like 8:30 and kind of start. And they basically went until the police shut it down.
Yep. Yeah. Yes.
We built up this repertoire where we could play, you know, you take breaks here or there, but we could play, you know, between our own stuff and covers that, you know, people wanted to hear, we could play that long without repeating. And that just, you know, that was I always think of that really fondly, because one, they were just really fun, and you can imagine what that environment's like, you know, and you got
the college keggers.
Yeah,
500, you know, sophomores.
It was pretty cool.
But just as a band, you know, just to be that tight, to be able to play that long and, you know, not repeat stuff and, you know, just sound good. I was really proud of that.
Yeah. Now, you know, I was reading too, you know, obviously as we were talking a little bit before we went on, going on to, you know, you reach a point where it was like, all right, now I got to go get it, you know, a real job. I got to start a family. And you guys sound like you, you know, a lot of you went on to have some successful careers or still do, like, what, somebody's a lawyer, another's a veterinarian, another's a TV producer. I don't know who's what here,
I'm the vet.
Nice.
And I'm the lawyer.
Okay, yeah, you got that lawyer look. So
yeah, watch your back.
From the undecided punk rocker, from breaking the law to making the law. I love it.
Exactly. Yeah.
But you know, when was it where it was like, and what was the feeling like when it was like, okay, this, you know, the dream. Did it almost feel like the dream was over, and then going to pursue it, and then like, yes, what brought everybody back? You know?
Yeah, it definitely did. And I think I was the one that made the most abrupt change, where I just, I just gave away all my instruments except for the one guitar that's in the behind me. It was the one thing I saved. So it's kind of funny that that's in the picture right here. But in order for me to have success in my other life, becoming a professional, becoming a family member, all that stuff, I had to just say goodbye to it all, so to speak. But Seth and I kept in contact that whole time, and I never lost my obsession with music. That was always there. But two things happened, two main things. I guess Seth brought me back into writing songs for fun because of technology. And I thought that was really important, that here's a guy that's living on the opposite corner of the country from me, and through the newest technology that is so good and so accessible, we could start writing songs again as if we were in the same room. Not quite as if we're in the same room, but pretty close. So that all of a sudden, out of nowhere, we just started writing songs again. And I'm glad he brought me back. The second thing was a friend of Seth's, well, it's a friend of mine too, but bumped into Seth and gave him an old demo tape, something that we hadn't really listened to for 20 or 30 years. And you opened the show about talking about, you know, you don't lose this dream. Well, I guess that reintroduced me to the dream, you know, hearing that music again. Not only was I kind of surprised that it was actually decent, you know, but the second thing was, it just reintroduced me to just all the memories and all the, you know, we had some unfinished business, so to speak. And that's when Seth and I finally said, and yes, I was the one that said it, but either one of us could have said it, that, oh my gosh, we've got these new songs. We've got the old songs. We never finished that album. We now have the means to do it. Let's do it. So we did. We're all in.
Nice. Like Limp Bizkit's back and they're putting out the dad vibes, and you guys fall in that category now then, right?
Sure.
Exactly.
Yeah, let's talk about, you know, so then, you know, the time off, you start families, you work towards your careers, pursuing your careers. Like it's funny. I mean, it's great that you're a veterinarian, Dave, because like my oldest daughter originally wanted to be a veterinarian, and then she got in a show choir in high school, and now she wants to pursue music. But I'm trying to tell her, well, you can do both, you know. You're probably better off trying to get the veterinarian thing and then have or do like music business courses and stuff like that. I'm trying, you know, but I'm dad. So, you know,
right,
what I say, you know, doesn't really matter. But let's talk about, you know, the time off, and you guys are like, you know, you're starting your families and you're pursuing these other. I mean, I guess I would say they had to be passions to put in all the time that you guys did to get these degrees.
Yeah. Go ahead, Seth.
Yeah, I mean, it's, and I think I speak for Dave on this too. I mean, we certainly no regrets about it. I mean, we had a great time when we were doing the band back then. It was a very, you know, formative experience for us. It's just, you know, the great thing about rock music, right, is you don't have to know how to read music. You can kind of just figure it out by paying a lot of attention, trial and error. And that translates a lot into, you know, you're talking about your daughter and her interests. You know, it's easy to sort of say, you know, oh, you know, you try to be in a band and what's that really worth? It's actually worth a lot, I think, because, you know, the focus that we put on trying to be good musicians and learning all that sort of on our own. I think, I know for me as a lawyer, you know, I can still feel those same, that attention to detail kind of stuff. I mean, same thing, Dave's a doctor, right? I mean, the things that we do are all about serious attention to detail, and that's what figuring out music was like. And so for me, you know, finding this other interest in, and I've had a great career as a lawyer, has been, you know, very gratifying, and obviously enables us to, you know, start families and, you know, support families, et cetera. And so I really, you know, yeah, I suppose everybody could you know, if you had a blank check to write the script of your life, yeah, we could all have sort of, you know, pie in the sky dreams that, but barring something like that, I'm very content with the way things turned out, and to be able to come back to music now is, I think, in a lot of ways more gratifying, because, you know, we're just older and hopefully a little smarter, and you know, you're able to kind of prioritize things and realize what's really important to you, you know, all those things that just come with, you know, getting older, being a parent, you know, being a husband, or, you know, whatever significant other, partner, etc. I don't know, it just helps bring, it's interesting, not to get too far afield from your question, but one of the things Dave and I have talked about a lot is, as we're basically the songwriters in the band, you know, writing songs now, one, we're just much better at it because we've had these intervening decades of learning how to do it better, or just listening to more music, et cetera. But, you know, there's when you're 19 or 20, there's a lot of testosterone and a lot of ego in the air, you know, and yeah, you know, we never really fought or anything, but, you know, now it's like you write songs and there's no ego about, oh, you're trying to get rid of my part, or, you know, I like this better. It's just, we're very, very good about, like, yeah, that's a good idea, that's a bad idea, let's just try to get it to the best song we can and not worry about, you know, who started something, or, you know, whether your little contribution on this part makes it in or not. And and that part's been really, I think, really rewarding for the both of us.
Yeah. That was one of our biggest problems. You made me think about it when you told them about the whiskey getting the encore. My memory was the opposite. And actually, it was something that reminded me how immature we were. We played the Palomino, and the crowd wanted us to do an encore, but we were over our time limit. I started playing anyway. That's and really, it's not their fault. You know, it's not the Palomino's fault. It was my fault. I was immature. And something that I like about the band now is we have a better maturity in some of these things, where we won't do stupid things like that. So it's funny because you talked about, Seth, how you're right. There was a maturity to it, where, and a discipline to try to sit there and learn all these songs and figure things out. But then there was the other side where yeah, there were some things that weren't so mature. And so now I'm glad that it's probably better that we didn't make it back then. It's probably better that we're attempting it now.
Well, I would agree with that statement too, because, you know, if you're getting into the, you know, with this second run, before you sign any like record deal contracts, it's always good to have a lawyer look over everything.
So. Yes. Yes.
Well, and I'll tell you what's funny is the, and you may have read a little bit about this, you know, Brian Reed from the band Tesla is the one who ended up recording, producing, arranging, and mixing our album. And the way we connected with Brian is because Dave was Brian's veterinarian for a long time. Tesla is a band from Sacramento, California. That's where Dave lives, and he's been a vet there for 20 something years.
5 years, something like that.
He and Brian just became friendly because Brian always has 2 Jack Russell dogs, and
yes.
Dave took care of them for a long time, and then Brian moved to he left, now is in New York, but that was our connection when we started to do this. We were like, you know, Brian's got a studio, and we just kind of thought, Dave gave him a call just to say hi and say like, hey, we're thinking about using your studio, and Brian's just a great guy, and he's like, I love Dave, he's the best vet I ever had. And so he got a little more involved, thankfully, than might have otherwise been the case.
Yeah.
Nice. And then, you mentioned a little bit about it, but then, like, coming back together, and you said due to technology and everything today, it makes things easier. But, and you guys, you said you never kind of, like, lost touch with each other. But let's talk more about now, you know, getting back together. And what it's been like putting together, an album.
Yeah, I mean, it's been, I mean, the technology thing has really been key. And I would be remiss not to credit my older son, Sam, because you can appreciate this as a dad and dealing with kids and technology. Sam, my older son, is the one who showed me how to use GarageBand with kind of this look on his face of sort of barely disguised disgust that I didn't know how to do this. And I called myself a musician. But for a brief moment, I was more technologically savvy with music stuff than Dave, because then I showed Dave how to use GarageBand. And then, just like it was in the old days, Dave then has clearly surpassed me on all the all the technological stuff, which is great. But it really is amazing, because it did allow us to be writing songs together on two separate, you know, in California and New Jersey, where I live now. And it's actually a great way, you know. Yeah, in a perfect world, you know, we'd still love to be able to go over each other's house and, you know, hey, let's do this or whatever. But in a lot of ways, it's actually a great way to work, because there are, you know, there's some songs that come together very quickly. And there are other songs that really take time to develop. And this, with the technology, you know, and busy lives, you can really do it. And I can send Dave things, say, like, here's an idea. And a lot of times what happens is, you know, Dave sort of mulls it over, and you know, you just got to wait till it sort of strikes the other person right. And then all of a sudden it'll be like, you know, 3 weeks later, Dave said something back to me, and I finally kind of get it. And I, you know, here's what I think we should do with it. And you can keep iterating that way. And it's great. And that process really even followed through into the actual album. So we were able to make, through our own means, really solid demos of the songs that are on this album. And then when we started recording it with Brian, you know, there were times where, you know, the band kind of came together to record a lot of it. But after that, you know, there were a lot of things Dave then would kind of do some additional guitar work at his house. He was able to do that. Dave Santos, our singer, did a lot of the vocals in L.A. And then you're able to send them to Brian to then, you know, kind of engineer and mix. And so it really was this process of, you know, having people in four different locations be able to record an album, sometimes together, but in a lot of the process, not together. And it came out great. We couldn't be happier with the album.
That's right.
And I was reading, so the name of the album's Anum, but this is like 30 years in the making, basically. Is a lot of the old stuff too getting from the demos getting put out?
Yeah, there's two songs on the album now that are songs that we used to play in the late 80s. Although we upgraded them a little bit, but for the most part, they're the same as they were. And then the rest of the songs, the album's 10 tracks. So two of them are the old ones. Eight of them are new ones.
Okay, great. And then, like you said, it's kind of like, you know, 30 years in the making, going back to like never giving up on your original dream and proving that you guys can get this done. And I'm sure, you know, the finished product now, is it ready to come out, or is it out, or?
So it's done. It's all, you know, produced. We got the cover. It's ready to go. We have our first single, Hey Wait, is out now. And we've been fortunate that's getting played on some radio stations around the country. And you know, we seem to be doing pretty well on Spotify, et cetera. So we're going to have a second single that will come out within the next month or two. And then the whole album will be available as well.
I can't wait.
Yeah. And then do you have a date yet?
No.
No?
No, we don't have a date yet.
You're talking about for the release of the album?
Yeah.
So once we sort of get the second single out, then we'll have a date for actually releasing the rest of the album.
And how gratifying has it been to have to play the single for your son, who gave you that look when he was first teaching you how to do GarageBand?
It's been very gratifying. He's really, my son does a lot of, if you're familiar with this medium of mashups, where, you know, people take songs and they can sort of strip elements down and kind of create something new out of parts of other songs. So he's, he's pretty sophisticated with the technology, but he, no, he's been very supportive of the whole effort. And, you know, it's nice for folks our age at this point, right? You know, we're not necessarily have our thumb on the pulse of all things new in music. And so, you know, to have a 20-year-old who actually knows what's going on is pretty helpful. And but he loves the song. Nice.
Yeah, one of the greatest things was when we had some pre-warning when one of the times when the song was played on the radio. And so hearing our song on the radio for the first time, that was pretty cool. That was really cool.
Yeah, and were you able to like have it on at the vet office?
Yeah, we've actually played it there. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah,
it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. Everybody at work has been pretty supportive.
Yeah, that's great, man. And then the album, you're getting ready to come out. Now, is there any kind of like talk or plans of trying to play some live shows together to promote it?
Yeah, that's kind of the next step, and we're starting to work on that now, and I think we'll be able to do it, and it'll, you know, some of that will depend on, you know, whether, or I shouldn't say whether, but kind of where there may be some demand for it, but we are starting to look at that pretty seriously, and it would be a lot of fun to do that again. It'll be surreal for, you know, for Dave and I and Tony, the drummer, to be doing that again together after, you know, 30 yeah. plus years.
We're meeting maybe down in LA this weekend to rehearse.
Oh, nice. I was going to say, maybe your son can hook you up with some college keggers.
Exactly. Yeah.
Really take it back to the roots.
Right. Yes.
Except but obviously,
we'll be watching kids to make sure they're not indulging them.
Yeah. Yeah.
But obviously I would think, you know, maybe, you know, trying to, you know, get into the Troubadour for a show would be.
It'd be great. It'd be great. You know?
Absolutely.
Kind of come full circle.
Yeah. And that, what a story that would be right there, you know. I mean, this almost sounds like it could be one of those like documentaries, you know, to follow this,
right.
You know, for people. It's pretty, it's very inspiring for sure. And, you know, I know as a dad, you know, it's like, you know, I mean, I do this podcast thing. I'm retired from the Navy and stuff, but, you know, I've made a lot of friends and relationships in the music world. So whenever, you know, certain artists that I become friends with over the years come to town and I get to take my daughters and stuff to the show and we get to go backstage and stuff, I get to be cool dad. So,
right.
You know, I definitely excited for you guys to have that, I mean, you're already having the cool dad moment, but you know, if to get the family out there and play the Troubadour, I'm hoping that happens for you guys.
Thank you. Yeah.
And then, other than, you know, the album coming out and playing a live show together, what other kind of goals do you guys have, going forward?
To make the second album. We already have the songs lined up. We've been, bouncing the demo tapes back and forth, making sure the songs are as ready to be. And I got to tell you, I mean, we don't even have the first album out. I'm already excited to make the second one. The songs are fantastic. I'm really excited. And that's, what do you got, Seth?
Yeah, no, same thing. I mean, you know, we're starting to try to plan how we can get that done and it'll be great. You know, I think, you know, as much as we love Anthem and what's coming out, I think we're excited that this will actually be an even better album.
And then, I mean, you guys kind of originally started like what as a garage band, and now, you know, garage band is keeping it alive.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's great. Well, yeah. So like any fans that are out there that are you know, new to hearing about you guys and want to learn more, check it out. Where would you send them?
So if you go to adollshouse.com, that's our website, and you can find us on, you know, Spotify, Apple, Pandora, iHeartRadio is playing it. So all the streaming platforms, if you go to our website at dollshouse.com, you'll see the link tree to all our social sites, the videos up there. It's a pretty neat video for Hey Wait, and you'll find all the info you need there.
Nice. And then before we get ready to wrap up, I want to ask you guys a couple questions that I normally ask my guests that I have on. Who are three people who've inspired you and you can credit for making you the person you are today?
You want to go first, Dave?
Well, sticking with the music thing, I would say Paul McCartney. I mean, he's been my hero for a lot of things. So, so keeping it related, I would say he's one of the first just to follow what he's done in his life and how hard he works. That would be one. Your turn, Seth.
Yeah. So I think, you know, the two that come to my mind would be, the guy in the Dodger hat right here, Dave,
thanks.
Because, we really did. I mean, I don't want to sound too sappy about it, but Dave was always, you know, a better musician than I was. But we really learned a lot about learning how to play music and write music together at the same time. And so, it, you know, just going through that experience together was just one of those kind of formative things that, you know, you just don't get a chance to do again, really, when you're older. And then secondly, I would say, you know, and again, this will sound sappy, but my wife, who Dave has known longer than I have.
Yes.
I've been married to the same beautiful woman for almost 30 years, and literally met her because Dave was dating a girl that knew her. They went to the same high school, and she has always supported me with whatever harebrained ideas that I have, like, hey, let's get the proverbial band yak together and make an album. And, you know, you can relate when you're a parent, you know, you can't do that if you don't, if everybody's not on board and helping you do it. So those are the two that come to mind. And I think you said three. I mean, the thing, this isn't quite responsive, but the thing that I just think is amazing about music, and I alluded to this before, is, you know, particularly, I don't know if all other genres work this way, but the thing about, you know, like the kind of stuff we do, rock music, you know, sort of writ large, whatever genres is, you know, I can say, you know, you don't have to read music to be able to do it. You don't have to take lessons to be able to do it. But in some ways, you can learn from the greatest that there are. So that's the way Dave and I learned how to play music, is we would get, and literally then they were records. And you'd sit there and you just would stick at it and figure it out. But, okay, then you learn how to play bass from Paul McCartney. Or, you know, Dave, like at one point, Dave learned every Led Zeppelin song there was on guitar. You know, and you can go through those things. And that's just what's a great thing about music is, you know, these giants in your mind that are out there, you can basically just take lessons right from them if you want.
Okay.
Nice. And then, Dave, did you have your final two?
I don't really think, I can't really think of any at the moment. There's too many people. You're around this long, there's too many people that influence you in what you do. So no, I don't have a good answer for you right now. Sorry.
All right.
No Watch, I'll think of it in the middle of the night. I'll say, oh, I should have said that person.
I don't know. I want to keep you up all night, you know. But
yeah, no, you will. Because I didn't have an answer. I'm like, oh, man.
But and then any message you guys have for our military members that are currently serving overseas?
Oh, God. I know it sounds so cliche, but thank you for your service. I was an Army brat. My dad was in the Army. He was drafted, I think, in 66, but then didn't actually go to serve until 67 to 69. No, seriously, thank you for your service. People don't realize the sacrifice.
Yeah, and I would, just to add on to that, I think, you know, particularly in the world that we live in now, it's easy to forget that people are actually out there in different parts of the world, and that at any moment, you know, you can look at the stuff in Ukraine for the last year. Stuff can happen overnight and all of a sudden it's on the line, and all the things that, you know, we enjoy, particularly in the US, and you know, it's easy to forget that all those things are possible, to do something as frivolous, right, as four guys in their early 50s making an album, right? You can only do that in a country where everything is secure and you've got that that safety net that comes from people being in the service year in and year out. And, you know, that's what I would add to it.
Yeah. Awesome. Good to hear. Well, you know, guys, man, it was good to have you on and hear your story, and, you know, definitely inspiring for other dads like myself out there to just keep going after it. I've had Matt Pinfield on here before, and I share with him, like, as a kid, I used to always want to do something similar to this, you know, like I had a little tape recorder and I'd make my own tapes watching, you know, Johnny Carson and stuff like that, you know, growing up, like, I want to be a host or something. And then you start growing up and, you know, parents or whatever, you know, they mean in a loving way, but they're like, you know, that's not for you. You got to go to school. You got to do this. You got to work in this job. And, you know, but here I am back, you know, retired from the Navy and, you know, being able to pursue my kid dreams. So, you know, to all the dads that don't give up on their dream and they still raise halfway decent kids along the way, man, hats off to you guys.
Well, great. That's good. Great for you as well.
Yeah.
And once again, man, thanks for, you know, the time and sharing your story. And I look forward to hearing more. Like, I'll have Shauna make sure she keeps me in the loop when when you guys get to make it full circle and play that Troubadour show.
Yeah. And thanks for having us on.
Yeah. Thanks a lot. Appreciate
it. A blast.
Wait, hey, so far. Hey, baby, this is Double D, also known as Dream Daddy. And I gotta tell y'all something about our new sponsorship here at today's Boondoggle. And the name is Dream Nutrition. So if you're looking to empower your human vitality, well, then you come to the right place. With over 12 years of combined experience in cannabinoids and terpene products, Dream Nutrition products include CBD oils, patches, protein, and so much more. The endocannabinoid system is believed to have involvement in regulating physiological and cognitive processes, including the immune system, appetite, pain sensation, mood, memory, and in mediating the pharmacological effects of cannabis. Support this veteran-owned and operated company today, and today's Boondoggle fans will receive 10% off their orders when using the promo code BOONDOG10 at checkout. That's BOONDOG10 at checkout. So go to the link. That's dreamnutrition.com/discount/boondog10. And remember, dream is not spelled like Dream Daddy. It's spelled D-R-E-E-M. And start saving today because you deserve to feel your best. And you know that's right. So tell them Dream Daddy and your friends from today's Boondog sent you.
Thank you for listening once again to today's Boondoggle Radio Show. Please be sure to check out our website, domaincle.com or todaysboondoggle.com for more shows and check out our archives. Follow us on social media at Today's Boondoggle on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter for more information about this podcast. And please support us on www.anchor.fm/todaysboondoggle, as well as on our GoFundMe and Venmo. Be sure to subscribe, comment, download, and listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spreaker, and all the other podcast platforms out there. Please email us with any questions, suggestions, and comments via todaysboondoggle@gmail.com. Leave us some 5-star reviews and help spread the word. Thanks again for listening.
Thank you for tuning into this week's Today's Boondoggle. Domain Cleveland Entertainment is a veteran-owned and operated cornucopia of nonsensical shenanigans. You can find interesting interviews, music news and information, and just about everything else in between. Thank you again for supporting, sharing, and tuning into Today's Boondoggle.